Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts. As the campaign trail shifts from the Granite State, isn't that what they call New Hampshire, the Granite State, to the Palmetto State of South Carolina, an introduction to the South in this podcast. And we're going to start with Tennessee, the Volunteer State, a little music and a little shooting, taking a break from the political nonsense on our way to South Carolina in podcast 464. Well, you're going to find if you ever come down to the South that change is a very important word. Things have been changing down here for a long time, and you wouldn't believe how much these cities have grown and how many people have come here. And change is a constant, and especially when it comes to real estate, change is one of those key words. And, you know, you hear me talk about Eric and Aaron Lucero, the husband and wife real estate team with prideofhomes.com and Luke Team Real Estate. And Eric was just telling me that the thing that's changed in the North Metro, which is growing like crazy, is right now there are more sellers than buyers, which means that you really need help, especially if you're in the market to sell. And if you're in the market to buy, you got to have somebody that understands the house by house market in the North Metro. And I've talked about prideofhomes.com to listeners and subscribers to the Bob Davis podcast. If you're looking to sell or buy, reach out to Eric and Aaron Lucero, husband and wife team with Luke Team Real Estate and prideofhomes.com. They're in the North and Northwest Metro, Maple Grove, Plymouth, Rogers, Dayton, Albertville, St. Michael, Elk River, Champlin, and the North Metro 94 corridor. Here's their number, 763-433-9100, 763-433-9100. Let me tell you, people rave about Luke Team and Luke Team Real Estate's customer service, and at least one listener to the Bob Davis podcast bought a house with Eric and Aaron, and they talked about how great they were. So buying or selling, the whole key is somebody who is a real estate professional that has knowledge of the market, so you can find a property that fits your needs, or you can find a buyer that can obtain the right financing and can actually go to close. And as a husband and wife team, Eric and Aaron Lucero can respond quickly. When you put all that together with the customer service at Luke Team Real Estate, you're good to go. As I said, the North Metro is growing quickly. You got 94 and 610 expansions, schools, and access to both Minneapolis and St. Paul. So if you're looking to buy or sell property, get a hold of Eric and Aaron Lucero in the North and Northwest Metro for real estate expertise. Eric and Aaron Lucero, 763-433-9100, 763-433-9100. And thanks you guys for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. We're live in Bristol, Virginia. It's a great little town. Part of it is in Tennessee, and the other part is in Virginia. So it's actually Bristol, Virginia, and Bristol, Tennessee. It is in Appalachia. These mountains, the Blue Ridge, the Great Smoky Mountains, Lookout Mountain, they run from southern New York down through the Mid-South to western South Carolina, northern Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi. Certainly not the only geographic feature of the state the current political focus is about to set upon South Carolina or even Tennessee, but really especially in the Mid-South, Tennessee, Kentucky, Virginia, and further south to northwestern North and South Carolina, the mountains play a major role. As I said, I'm in Bristol, Tennessee, and Virginia. In 1927, this is the place where a guy named Ralph Peer, who is a talent scout and recording engineer, used the latest in recording technology to document and launch the careers of several music artists who lived in and around these mountains. The Carter family is a good example. 1927 is an important period in the history of this town and these mountains, and the recordings that made a major impact on the development of American music reflect this sort of pivotal time in the history of the Mid-South and the South in general. It was around then that the railroads, development of natural resources, and the resulting commerce brought change to this part of the United States. And to me, it's more than that. You know, we joke that this part of Tennessee and Virginia are all about guns and Jesus, and I will and I do. Even the people from around here joke about that kind of stuff, or the Confederate flag, which was flying on a very high pole right along Interstate 24 just outside of Bristol. But if that's all you think that this part of the country is about, you'd be really wrong. Bristol, Chattanooga, Nashville, Louisville, in this part of the Mid-South, project a hospitable, and there's a lot of hospitality. These people are great. but undeniable energy. There's a little bit more energy, especially in the Mid-South, than you might see in places in the Deep South, because I don't know why, but it just feels that way. And there are people here from all walks of life, and they're not all born and raised in Tennessee or places like that, Virginia. A friend, I posted my picture of my Guns and Jesus weekend on Facebook, which is actually the art for this podcast. And a friend said that, hey, you know, you can talk about guns and Jesus, but you really need to talk about Oak Ridge. And I was like, yeah, you know, that's a really good point. Oak Ridge Laboratories is in Tennessee, which is where the atomic bomb was finished. There are tons of major companies headquartered and with satellite offices all over Tennessee and Kentucky and in Virginia, below the biggest company in the world, of course, which is the United States government, which everybody knows about, in Washington, D.C., where the streets are paved with golds. We think of the old so-called Rust Belt as the industrial heart of America. Chicago, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Cleveland. But really, for many years now, dating back to the period in the early 1900s, things began to change in the South in the 1920s. When I was in Chattanooga, there's a giant reserve, which they're turning into a public-private industrial park, which used to be an ammunition plant, which was built before and during World War I. So ever since the 1920s, the South's importance began to rise. It's always had a cultural, political, and economic impact in the United States. But today, the South is really an important cultural, economic, and political force in the U.S. that I think equals the so-called industrial North, especially as we become more technology-oriented in this country. But let's go back to those days in Bristol in 1927. Now, for some background on this, I talk with Renee Rogers, curator of exhibits and publications for the Birthplace of Country Music Museum in Bristol, which is a really cool place, and it opened after a lot of work in the community in August of 2014. It took a lot for this town to get this museum. The Birthplace of Country Music Museum is a Smithsonian-affiliated museum, so it's really special, and it's a great place to learn about the history of American roots music and country music. And this period in the history of the United States and this part of Tennessee and Virginia. All through this area, Scots, Irish, and English settlers lived a hard life.
The Appalachian Mountains were not an easy place to live. They weren't an easy place to make a living. I mean, it's still difficult, you know. It's the mountains have their own challenges. And certainly also at the turn, you know, around the early 20th century, there was a lot of changes happening for people around here. You know, in industry and manufacturing was starting to creep in. People's way of life was changing. And a lot of that is reflected in the music. So the people who are singing the music understood those changes, and the people listening to the music understood those changes and understood what was, you know, understood the community that they were coming from. And so the appeal of the people who were making the music and the people who were listening to it, they had very similar experiences. They knew that hard life, that rural, you know, living off, you know, making a living from the land kind of life that they had been.
Right. And people from Minnesota always talk about how cold it is and so forth, but the soil is incredible. And the soil is incredible in Iowa. And the difference, you know, here it's, you can farm, but you really have to, you have to dig, you have to start by getting rid of all the rocks, which, under the rocks are rocks.
You know, and also, you know, you're in these mountains, so you're not on these big flat plains, but also, there was a huge amount of resources in this area that were starting to be exploited, and that changed, you know, that changes the landscape and changes the way people are working and living. So
the people who settled here brought their songs and stories with them from Scotland and Ireland and England, and it's reflected in the music, and it forms a base for one whole genre of today's music, but has influences far beyond that.
There was Scots-Irish. There was also obviously English settlers and English influences from the ballads and that type of thing. But like I said, that wasn't the only kind of music that was sort of coming together here.
So they created something completely different. They took those influences, all the influences that would have been around here at the time, and they created something completely new.
Well, I don't know if you would call it completely new, because I think that...
I always exaggerate.
I just think that those, you know, some of these songs were traditional songs that people have been singing for years, but there might be a new take on it or a new way of sort of singing that song, especially because when you go from a ballad of, say, 12 verses to something that has to fit on a 3.5-4 minute recording, things have to change. So you do still have these traditional songs that are being sung, but they are being sung in a different way and sort of being treated differently in order to fit that format so that they could be commercially marketed. There was success that came out of those recordings. And certainly the Carters and Ralph Peer and Jimmy Rogers and Ernest Stoneman, you know, they continued to record a lot and worked. And, you know, Ralph Peer went on to record a huge range of music, not just hillbilly music. I mean, that was one of the reasons why Ralph Peer and other record label producers were coming to this area, because they were also recording. They came back to Bristol in 1928. There was also recording sessions in Johnson City soon after, and Knoxville. There are a lot of the type of musicians that they were looking for based here in this area, making this type of music and making this type of music really well.
So around the 1920s, using new technology, the record company sent people like Ralph Peer out to discover and record new artists reflecting the music scene in and around here at that time.
Bristol in 1927 had the 1927 Bristol Sessions. Obviously, they weren't known as that at the time. It's looking back that you see the significance, but it was a early location recording sessions. So these are sessions that were being recorded outside of where the major record labels had their studios and their recording equipment, and they were traveling to different places to find music that they thought that they could market. Ralph Peer came to Bristol in 1927 and recorded here, and it was sort of a perfect storm of events that culminated to make these sessions go on to such importance. And that was, I mean, Ralph Peer himself knew what he was doing. He was a very good marketer. He knew how to make the music commercial. The microphone technology had changed recently. So from an acoustic horn to an electric microphone, which meant that the actual sound and quality was better. So these were records that people could hear, you know, they could hear the music better, they could enjoy them more because the quality was better.
Right.
And also, some of the artists that came out for the 1927 Bristol Sessions are really significant in country music history. There was a lot of artists that did some amazing music. There was 19 different acts, 76 different recordings.
Wow.
The Stone, Ernest Stoneman, he had already recorded almost 100 sides before this with various record labels, but he sort of continued to have his significance after this and was an important country music artist. But the Carter family and Jimmy Rogers recorded for the first time in Bristol in 1927. And Bristol wasn't the first early location recording sessions, and there were other significant ones that happened before Bristol, but Bristol had these events that sort of made them have that impact. Yeah, it came together to have a very specific impact. And that's where the sort of terminology has come from. Some of the people were performers. They were using their music as performers. Some of them were congregational choirs. Some of them just saw the advertisement and came out to record because they made music. That's what they did. So it wasn't like it was all professional musicians coming to one place. It was a whole different range of, you know, a variety of different types of musicians coming together. Here in Bristol, there were radio stations that were playing this type of music. The music was being disseminated on the airwaves. I mean, the Carter family, after 1927, went on to border radio down in Mexico, which was beaming their music and their sound, you know, far and wide. So the radio's waves were certainly very influential in this music becoming popular.
Well, it's an interesting conflux of radio and music, you know, American. I hate to call it folk music. I mean, what would you call it, bluegrass or?
I mean, we call, you know, this idea of traditional old time music, but also, I mean, obviously there is bluegrass in there, but certainly not what was happening in 1927 would not probably be classified as bluegrass.
Okay.
You know, we look at all of this as American roots music. It's the, you know, it's right. Such a conglomeration of different influences that were coming together for this music. I mean, you know, you had the Irish and Scottish descendants that were here. You had gospel music. You had African American music. All of it sort of
kind of fits
working together. Yeah.
And here, Did it have something to do elsewhere?
I mean, not just here, obviously.
Well, yeah, but I mean, in Tennessee and Virginia, and these mountains around here.
The musicians that came here in 1927 and 28. I mean, they were working with those. They were hearing those different sounds, and they were playing, you know, some of their traditional ballads and some of the traditional songs that they had passed down through generation and generation orally, you know, and now it was being recorded.
Down in Tennessee, I have driven Mobile Podcast Command really thousands of miles, coast to coast. I've been down. I'm down in Tennessee. I'm heading to South Carolina and Florida, as you know, and I'm driving Mobile Podcast Command, which is a 2000 Super Duty Ford diesel ambulance. And as I've told the story many, many, many times, Ed Johnson at Ex-Government Cars helped me get the ambulance. In fact, I wanted a van, and he said, you know, we're going to get you an ambulance. And this is the whole thing about customer service and attention to detail at Ex-Government Cars and Ex-Government Trucks. First of all, I should tell you that the Ex-Government Trucks Mega Center is now open in Forest Lake, Minnesota. So if you need a work truck, Ford, Chevy, Dodge, Toyotas, and more, you can get one. You get fast financing for all credit levels at Ex-Government Cars and ExGovernmentTrucks.com. If you bring in your tax return, you can use it as your down payment right now, and you're good to go. So they've got all kinds. And again, work trucks, SUVs, vans, and more. And they still have the Crown Vicks, the Ford Police Sedans, the Dodge Chargers, and all the great Ex-Government Cars at Ex-Government Cars. So once again, let me just review very quickly. Ex-Government Trucks has lenders for everybody at all credit levels. They get you pre-approved online fast. It's tax time, so if you bring your tax return, they can use that as a down payment and get you in line faster. Work trucks, SUVs, vans, sedans, chargers, Ford Crown Vicks, and more. And don't forget, they take trades every day, and they pay the top values without all the bull. They are open now in Forest Lake at 356 19th Street. Don't forget, there will be more announcements regarding more locations for Ex-Government Trucks and Ex-Government Cars. Reach out at 763-777-8782 or check them out at exgovernmentcars.com. And yes, I have the bullhorn.
Exgovernmentcars.com.
I have to make sure that I say that Bristol refers to itself as the birthplace of country music, not the home of country music. Lots of other places can call themselves the home. One of the things about this part of the country is that it was central to the development of American music at different times in its history, including this special time in the late 1920s in Bristol.
I mean, Bristol was it was sort of a booming town at the time. You know, it was known as the shopping center of the Appalachians at the time, you know, between Knoxville and Roanoke. It had two major railway lines coming into it. It was a hub. So that's, I mean, so partly the reason why it was a good place to record is because it was a place where people could get to easily. People, you know, it was the center, and it was on the railway line, but it wasn't.
And you can't, obviously people can't see it, but you have a really cool downtown.
We have a cool downtown. We're really lucky. We're really lucky. We've lost some of our great old buildings, but we still got a lot of the really nice historic buildings out there. And I mean, we're just really fortunate that we have this interesting story to tell. The museum, I think, exceeds people's expectations because it's not, you know, it's not just images and
outfits.
And artifacts and outfits, yeah. I mean, which is all very interesting, but it's also very interactive, which is because a lot of people, obviously we have a lot of people who will say, oh, I'm not really interested in country music. I don't know if I go to a museum about country music. But then they come there and they interact with it and they hear the music and they see the films that are in there, and they do get interested, and they get to actually sort of create some music themselves while they're in there, which people enjoy a lot. So we have like a mixing station where you can sort of mix some of the 1927 Bristol tunes a bit differently. There's a karaoke booth where you can sing and record yourself. There's all sorts of other things. You can listen to clips of all the 1927 Bristol sessions. You can learn about the history of 1927, but also beyond, you know, look at what we were just talking about, what this community was like and what Appalachia was like at the time, what Bristol was like. You can learn about what's continued through there, you know, the way that this music, this type of music, and not just the music of the 1927 Bristol Sessions, but the music I was talking about at all these early location recording sessions has continued when the festivals, you know, you go to festivals today, you're going to hear this music. So when you're a Smithsonian Affiliate Museum, you get obviously support from the Smithsonian in various ways. Mostly it's a lot of it is about the resources and the expertise that you can tap into. We can tap into them for programming. There's programs that can go out to the different affiliates. We can tap into them for traveling exhibits. For instance, we've got a Smithsonian traveling exhibit that will be coming here in 2017 called Things Come Apart. We're really excited about that. And we also had one last year called New Harmonies Celebrating American Roots Music. So you get to tap into a huge range of resources that, you know, as a smaller museum, you don't always have access to. Plus, you've got the expertise of the Smithsonian. You know, you can turn to them for advice. You can look to them to borrow objects for your own exhibits. And there's also professional development opportunities there. So there's a lot of different ways that it helps support the smaller museums.
Now, if you want to see and experience this stuff, coming through Bristol when you're in southwestern Virginia or eastern Tennessee is worth the trip. And of course, if you're around this part of the country in September, Bristol's Rhythm and Roots Reunion, it's a really huge, great music festival which celebrates the roots of American music, which is what they're calling this genre going back to the 20s. And it's annually held in the third weekend of September. The weather's great, and this is the big thing going on in Bristol, and it looks really fun. Of course, it's obviously February now, so that's not what's going on, but I want to come back in September for that music festival because that, I'm sure, is going to be great. Bristol is in Appalachia. Now, I say it Appalachia because I'm from Chicago. Some people say Appalachia. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it, but we always pronounced it Appalachia, so that's how I'm pronouncing it in this podcast. Sorry if I offend anyone. In a place like these mountains, just as in the case of the plains of Iowa and the farms of Iowa, to be poetic, a real vote of any kind by real people changes the storylines that the media loves to work when they try to cover these things, as will this vote in South Carolina. And as soon as the New Hampshire vote is over, the media and the politicians are going to head pell-mell for where I am right now. The South, specifically headed to South Carolina, you're going to hear a lot of nonsense about what local people think, who they're going to vote for. And I guess all I want to say is remember, this was not an easy place to settle, and it wasn't an easy life. It's where most of the devastation and destruction of war struck in the 1860s, and Reconstruction wasn't very kind to this part of the country either. Of course, the industrial development of the South came from the early 1900s on, as I've talked about. It accelerated in the 1940s and 50s, but it really took hold after the 1960s with the development of the interstates and the big cities and all these places. And, you know, I can remember being a kid and we used to drive through. I've driven across Nashville and Kentucky and Georgia and North and South Carolina many times in my life. Places like Nashville, Charlotte, Charleston, Greenville have changed. Of course, Atlanta has also changed. These cities have all become magnets for businesses and young people moving to where the jobs are from all over the place, and you don't hear too much about it. Nashville is like a huge place these days. So while it's fun to make fun of the Mid-South Bible Belt and the natural stereotypes about the South, and as I said, people here do occasionally make fun of that stuff, those stereotypes really don't describe what life is like here or how people think these days. And I think, as I said with Iowa, and I was right, I think there's going to be some big surprises in store for South Carolina's primary for Republicans on Saturday, February 20th, and for Democrats 1 week later on February 27th. And then it is on to Georgia, also one of the Super Tuesday states, which is March 1st, Florida, which primaries March 15th, Alabama, another Super Tuesday state, Louisiana on March 5th, Texas on Super Tuesday, Oklahoma, Missouri, and back to Minnesota, also a Super Tuesday state. And of course, I could not leave this podcast without a little bit of shooting.
No idea where that one went.
Okay.
I didn't see it either. dead on but high. Didn't see it. Little to the left, lower. That's coming down. That you were just in the upper left-hand corner, almost hit it.
That's a solid bang right there.
Yes.
You hit number three. Try not to shoot that high.
Sorry about that.
Got a lot of time to go over it.
Well, now that.
Oh, you're good? Yes.
That action's actually a lot easier than that Russian action.
This one's way easier to shoot than the other thing.
I didn't see where that hit, did you?
That's great.
At 200 yards. Have a nice day.
So wherever I go in Mobile Podcast Command, I can never forget ex-government cars. Don't forget, ex-government cars and ex-government trucks now open in Forest Lake, Minnesota, 356 19th Street. They've got Ford, Chevy, Dodge, Toyota trucks. They also have the great ex-government cars, the incomparable Ford Crown Vic. I've had three of them, Dodge Chargers, the Ford Police Sedans, and more. Fast financing. If you bring in your tax return, they can get you hooked up a lot faster. Check them out at ex-government cars.com, xgovernmenttrucks.com, and thanks, Ed, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts.
xgovernmentcars.com.
If you're in the market to sell or buy a house in the North Metro, which is growing really fast, don't forget that you need a real estate professional that understands the market, and that's where prideofhomes.com and Luke Team Real Estate comes in. Reach out to Eric and Aram Lucero, the husband and wife team with Luke Team Real Estate and prideofhomes.com in the North and Northwest Metro for real estate expertise. Eric and Aram Lucero, 763-433-9100. That's 763-433-9100. And thanks, guys, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. Pilots, listen up. I know pilots want to get there, but really they want to get there safely, especially the people that know and love them. And if you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. Bottom line is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. It's FAA approved. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more information about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. It'll take you to their page. There's a little video that I voiced that explains what it does and how it works. Most pilots know already, but Alpha Systems AOA is a great system. They want to get it into your avionics package today, so check that out. And thank you for being a digital sponsor of the Bob Davis Podcast.com. And thanks to the listeners of the Bob Davis Podcast for subscribing at Stitcher.com, which is great for Android devices, iTunes, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com. If you're listening to the radio show at GCNLive.com, thank you. And thanks for liking, sharing, and favoriting, unfollowing on Facebook. Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. I'm bdavis7843 on Instagram. And don't forget, you can listen to the podcast right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. And thanks for your donations. I'm using them as we speak for diesel fuel and Komodo Dragon coffee, which I just bought. Bought some more a couple days ago. And beef jerky on the trip. And occasional yoga, but I'm using my cash for that. But thank you for donating to thebobdavispodcast.com. And thanks for listening to Podcast 464, live from Bristol, Tennessee.
Pretty Polly, Pretty Polly, would you think it unkind? Pretty Polly, Pretty Polly, would you think it unkind? Me to sit down both sides you and tell you my mind. I called it Pretty Polly, won't live long night. I called it Pretty Polly, won't live long night, and left the next morning before it was light. I led her over the hill through the valley so deep. I led her over the hill through the valley so deep, at last Pretty Polly beginning to weep.